The Guardian.
The Guardian Football Weekly Extra podcast, coming up.
Football Weekly Extra. Squeaky bums. We haven't seen bums this squeaky since those Richard Gere and hamsters rumours. And all the drama is here in today's pod as Man United and Chelsea prepare to contest the first ever all-English Champions League final. And English fans sweat over getting a visa for the game. Surely a pair of jeans and a can of Coke would do the trick. Also, there's the Championship, down to the last weekend with everything still to be decided. Is it in the bag for the baggies? Will Stoke choke, etc. and so on? Elsewhere, Sid Lowe reports from Spain, there's word on Italy and France, there's your posts, and a look forward to the penultimate round of the Premier League, all in Football Weekly Extra.
This is Guardian Football Weekly Extra.
And in a week that saw Ronaldo brought down by three very unexpected tackles, it's welcome to the pod, Kevin McCarra.
Hi, James.
Hi, Kevin. You've had a busy week, haven't you?
Keeps me occupied.
Well, that's nice then. John Ashton back as well.
Hi, James. Yeah, nice to be back.
And nice to have you back, John. A special championship slot for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, lovely. And Paul Doyle.
Good man, James.
And you too, Paul. Paul, any truth in the rumours, because you were mentioned in dispatches this week, saying that your brother, let me see, John, writes for today's Globe and... Oh, sorry, the Globe and Mail, a Toronto-based paper.
No, that's not true. I don't have a brother called John.
Right.
But I do have a cousin in Canada who, yeah, funnily enough, is a lumberjack.
All right, so he's involved in the paper business. In more at the other end of the chain. All right. Well, there you go, listeners. Not his brother. Somebody else's brother. Now, on to other business. And, well, the Champions League, first off. Extraordinary midweek. Two English clubs reaching the final. First time ever, etc., etc., etc. Kevin, you were at both games. Mm. First off, how about Wednesday's? The greatest Chelsea-Liverpool Champions League semi ever.
It didn't have much to compete with, did it? But I was listening to Chelsea fans rather unkindly singing the John Arnarisa song afterwards. How did you score that goal? And sadly, I think they're on the money. That was a huge mistake. In that, and you think, what a different second leg would have been for a 1-0 lead for Liverpool. Mm. But it wasn't to be. The other aspect in terms of self-destruction was not the left-back, but the manager. What a marvellous idea to provoke Didier Drogba before the game. What a genius you are. How good you are at battle plans, Rafael Benitez. The man who prides himself in that preparation, knowledge, subtlety. The one thing that you can hope for with Drogba is that he will lose interest, because it happens about three games out of four. But when he's really pumped up, he's got everything, touch, skill, strength. And by heavens, he didn't fall down last night. He was too busy punishing Liverpool.
Right.
I think he was probably the decisive factor.
Yeah, he had outstanding. I noticed Avram Grant trying to dive when Gerrard...
You know the strange thing too? You think, yeah, how can a player care about what some other manager said? Surely the game itself is what matters. But they do react. I mean, maybe their competitor are just stupid, but they do respond to things like that.
Well, apparently Drogba had a picture of Benitez above his peg in the dressing room before the game.
Seriously?
He really took a...
Did he have
exception,
like,
to what he said.
Pair of horns drawn.
Yeah, throwing darts at it. I don't know.
Right. My word. That's a true story, Paul.
Yes.
Good Lord.
It's in the papers. It must be true.
Oh, I missed that. Well, yes, indeed. Fair play to Drogba and to Avram Grant and Frank Lampard and everybody. And it was a stirring final. Semi-final. Mm. And now we've got the final in Moscow. Obviously, last year's FA Cup final against United represented a high watermark, really, for sheer entertainment. Any chance that this one can be anything like as tremendously exciting?
I think it should grip us in the same way, I would think. I mean, as I was talking the other day, everyone now realises Manchester United, when they wish to be, are a very, very good defensive team. Mm. And they can be as boring as anyone. What an achievement that is. You have to take your hat off. Actually, I think it had to be done, because these repeated failures in Europe...
For United.
Yeah. Left Alex Ferguson with actually, for a club of that status and wealth, with a fairly undistinguished record. And the common factor, of course, was all this kind of trading of goals. And a lot of money has gone in over the years, starting with Rio Ferdinand at $30 million, and then buying two holding midfield players in Carrick and Hargreaves and playing Scholes deeper. Some people saw Carlos Queiroz's fault. These foreigners, they ruined the game. But Ferguson's a man in charge, and he wants a team that can shut up shop in a way they never did in the past.
It'll be very interesting to see where he plays Cristiano Ronaldo in the final, because from both semi-finals against Barcelona, he took him out of the position where he's been so effective all season, played him in a central role, and Ronaldo didn't shine in either. He's obviously aware of these jibes about him being a big game bottler, so you'd imagine he'll want to be in his preferred position.
But as you say, again, he wants defensive width. He's playing like 4-4-1-1, so there's like two players in each area of the pitch, so somebody can help out Hargreaves and someone can help out Evra. If he plays Ronaldo there, then you you lose that, don't you?
That's yeah. And particularly is in the final, Avram Grant, one selection error I think he made yesterday, although he wasn't punished for it, was playing Essien out right back. He does a job there, but I think he has to be in the middle. And if he's a right back for the final, then even more reason to play Ronaldo on the left.
Well, I think that's why Benayoun was playing in the left, wasn't it? Because they thought they could exploit that gap between Essien and the centre half, which they did early on in the game. Torres got through there.
And speaking of managerial decisions and that, Torres, who Benitez then said had a hamstring injury, and that's why he took him off. Is there any further light been shed on that? One of the bizarrest things we've seen.
I can only say that when he went off, Torres just looked really cheesed off.
Right.
All right, maybe he's cheesed off because he's injured, but I just assumed he was thinking, what has this maniac done now? You know, but then Benitez said he's injured, so who am I to dispute
this? It was
this?
An interesting pause when the reporter asked him, Jeff Shreve of Satellite Sports Channel, and he said, oh, yeah, hamstring. And there was this pause, as in, I don't believe you, but I can't say that.
No. And now he can't play him at the weekend, so assuming he were fit, you'd have to sustain the impression that he isn't.
Well, there you go. And, of course, Chelsea... How about that? Roman Abramovich gets his team through to the final. How much pressure is the referee going to be under?
I don't know. I think there's a big support for Manchester United as well, and everywhere in the world, of course. But,
right.
But whether there were many Russians at the game, I don't know. But apparently, yeah, some people in Russia will no doubt prefer to see the oligarchs' team lose, rich so-and-so.
Can I just complain about all these fans who are coming out and saying, now that there are two English teams in the final, we should take the final from Moscow and play it in Wembley or something?
It's
outrageous.
I mean, when you went just played Milan, no one said they should move it from Manchester, did
exactly,
they?
Exactly. Yeah. Two Western European teams were always going to compete the final.
Yeah, yeah.
They knew it at the start.
And they signed up. They spent 2 years preparing these finals and awarded it to City. No, you can't have it. I'm sorry, English teams are playing. We're going to have it at City of Manchester Stadium instead.
To be fair, though, it is linked to this visa problem that is raising its head. And
do you think that is going to be a problem?
There's various things that UEFA are saying today that they're going to sort it out very soon and it'll be up. I'm sure it'd be fine. I'm sure
there's
won't
no
be playing
problem.
In a half-empty stadium. Well, it's sort of linked in that. I just want to give the Man United and Chelsea fans a little bit of a defence.
They're complaining because it would cost a lot of money, but then they knew years ago it cost a lot of money. You know?
I think most fans are delighted it's going to be somewhere. But imagine how dull it would be if they played it at Wembley. It would be just like the League Cup again or something.
But I also think last year's FA Cup final.
Indeed, yeah.
That was dull.
I also think the UEFA have really failed here. This is an obvious issue, the visa thing, and that should have been agreed before they were awarded the final.
What, the visa situation?
Yeah. I mean, everyone knows that going to Russia is not a simple matter. UEFA must know it, and they must know that when this final
you need a letter of invitation. Now, I've got a letter of invitation, but I don't have a visa yet.
From who, James?
From the Russian sports something or other. It's a great letter, and I'll bring it in next week because it's fantastic. It's written in presumably the 70s in the heyday of Russian bureaus. But I don't know how an ordinary fan gets a letter of invitation unless it comes with a ticket.
Well, there's even the agencies that do it for you, aren't there, the whole process.
Oh, right, okay.
But UEFA, surely they interview the candidates, and one of the questions that you've asked the Russians is, how are you going to cope with the influx of all these supporters?
Surely the first question is, that much? Really? Okay. Well, there you go. Now, should we have a quick comment on the Man United game against Barcelona? You were there as well, weren't you, Kevin? But, I mean, comparatively less interesting than the one on Wednesday. Well done to United, etc. Yeah. Well done to Paul Scholes as well.
Yes.
9 years on.
I mean, a Swedish paper phoned me at the beginning of the week and said, they gave me a questionnaire to answer. And one of the questions was, who's the best player since formation in the Premiership? My answer was, I've no idea. Then I said, no, wait a minute. And I said, wait a minute, Paul Scholes, that's the name that just popped into my head. And I think Paul Scholes is wonderful, the intelligence, the danger that he poses, the fact that he's not a prat. You know, there's just so many things that are to his credit. He's just about done, really, isn't he? His legs have almost gone, but what a shot.
Right, indeed.
In fairness, not being a prat isn't a criteria of being a good footballer. I want to defend footballers' rights to be prats as long as they're good on the pitch.
But what I love about, I remember one day we were talking to Scholes and somebody said to him, kind of with a sort of sneer on his face, so you went to the Oldham game that weekend, and he said, it were a good game, and he was quite excited about it. Another occasion, somebody said in the mix zone to Rio Ferdinand, any chance a word with Paul Scholes? Said, don't be silly, I'll be halfway home by now. The minute the game's finished, Scholes is gone. You know, it's just not a big time, you know.
Right, very low profile, but through to the final 9 years after missing out on the Barcelona game. Well, that pretty much wraps it up for part one, amazingly enough. And part two coming up, there'll probably be a quick mention of Barcelona on that with Sid, and more besides, so stick around. Ooh, in Observer Sport Monthly this Sunday, Emma John gets to meet the Murray brothers, you know, of tennis, and talks to them about everything from sharing a flat to playing together to how they behave on court.
Have you ever sworn on court?
Yeah, I swear a lot, not like shouting out or anything like that, but yeah, I swear to myself or whatever, but no one's hearing that. Or...
How does it go down with your mum? Or quite
she used
down?
To do exactly the same thing when she played as well, so I don't think it really bothers her. Wouldn't obviously swear in front of your mum if you were just at dinner or something. I'd be standing, sitting at the dinner table swearing, but no, I mean, on the court, I think I don't care if I swear when my mum's
there. Yeah, I don't think she cares either. I mean, what can you do?
Woof, sounds a bit racy. That's all in Observer Sport Monthly this Sunday. Now, part two, Sid Lowe on the line from Spain. Hi, Sid.
Hello.
Hi, everything well there?
Yes, thank you.
Good. How's the weather?
The weather is beautiful today.
Right. Okay. A lot of listeners
are going to be out on my bike, couldn't
exactly,
I?
Exactly. Exactly so. But you've got a lot of work to do, haven't you?
I do have a lot of work to do, unfortunately, yes.
So, a bit like Barcelona.
Very much like Barcelona, who, right. who appears their entire squad will be renewed this summer.
They're going to be putting a lot of players on their bike.
They'll be putting a lot of players on their bike and hopefully getting a few players in on other
right.
bikes.
It's the end of a cycle.
Dear, it is.
Now
you're pumped up today, Sid.
I think I'm going to tire of this banter. Barcelona, right. How many players, Sid? 10? 20? How many players on their way out?
Well, they reckon it depends on who you believe this morning. Right. Mark and Ash, of course, are jumping up and down in glee. But then so too Sport and Manila Deportiva, the two Catalan papers, are saying that this is true. It does look like there could be as many as 6, 7, 8, maybe even more. In a way, that's not quite the revolution it sounds like, because, of course, we've already got to the stage where we know that Ronaldinho is going, and that's not a huge surprise. And amongst the other people who are going are people who very rarely play anyway. I mean, Esqueda will definitely go. Thierry Henry, funnily enough, is someone who they think may not need to go. There's been a lot of criticism of him, and a lot of people at the club think that he shouldn't stay. And I think there's a feeling as well that he's not that happy and doesn't want to stay. But there is a feeling that you know, it's his first season, and perhaps he can be given the benefit of the doubt in a way that some of the others can't. So he may not necessarily go, although of course it wouldn't be a massive surprise if he did, particularly if someone comes up with the money for him. The trouble is that Henry's kind of burnt his bridges a bit by saying the only English club he'd go to is Arsenal, and I can't see Arsenal wanting him now.
Mm. But do you want to say that? I don't understand how they can get rid of him. He's earning enormous money. Nobody, including Arsenal, would pay him that amount of money to come back at that age with a bad back.
Well, that's exactly the point, isn't it? As I say, you know, he's burnt his bridges in England saying the only English club he could go to is Arsenal, and England's the only league where anyone would pay for him and would have the money to be able to pay his wages, and therefore I don't really see what kind of exit he's got unless he was to give up entirely. And what wouldn't completely amaze me is, I think it's a bit early for this, but is if Omri ended up at some stage in the United States with David Beckham.
And you regard that as giving up entirely, do you, Sid, just to make that clear?
I think from the point of view of a competitive football career, I think right. probably Henry would.
Well, Ruud Gullit was agreeing with you this week. I don't know if you saw Ruud's comments. Kevin, you obviously did.
Yes, indeed. He was talking about not having enough players to make a reserve team and having to get some of the office staff to take part in reserve matches.
Are you serious?
No, I'm serious. Yeah, that was a big interview in the...
At the LA Galaxy, they have to get office staff to help
in the in the reserves. Right. There's this thing that you can't play... Young players can't play so many games for a set period, so some players aren't available.
Right.
And he's had office staff playing in reserve matches. And of course, 99.99% of the budget, if I remember correctly, goes to David Beckham, and everyone else earns a dollar a week or something like that.
Right.
Sid, is Deco one of the players who's going to move on? Because it strikes me, he gets unfair press over here. He's kind of portrayed as a prima donna type, but he has a tremendous work ethic on the pitch generally, doesn't he? And he's still an outstanding player from what I've seen.
Well, there's the contradiction there with Deco, because he gets a very, very bad press in Catalonia as well. He's seen as another person, if you like, of the Ronaldinho clan. And actually, that's not quite true, because Ronaldinho now, his kind of entourage doesn't involve anybody from the squad. It used to be that he was very close to Thiago Motta, who's gone to Atletico Madrid, but Ronaldinho's kind of backroom team now is really much like the entourage of a rapper. You know, he gets out of this Hummer, and 15 enormous blokes get out with him, all dressed in bling. And none of those are players anymore. But Deco has always been seen as following a similar lifestyle to Ronaldinho, as being a guy who goes out too much. But on the pitch, I think that Deco is possibly their most important midfielder. He may not have the fluidity of Xavi and perhaps the incision of Iniesta, but he's much more committed, as you say. He does perform when the big games come up, and I think one of the things that's made people a little bit dubious about getting rid of him, 3 weeks ago, they'd have said, definitely get rid of Deco. But the fact that he was possibly their best player in the two games against Manchester United, I think, has changed people's minds a little bit. That said, within the club, there is a determination to get rid of him. Mind you, there was a determination to get rid of him last summer, and they didn't manage to.
What about these stories said that Marcello Lippi may be heading off to Spain. Have you seen anything about this?
I haven't, I must confess, no.
All right, there's vague rumours that Lippi, who's kind of still floating around, quite literally most of the time, on his fishing boat off the coast of Viareggio, is, and every now and then he kind of touts himself around. Not quite as much as, say, Jose Mourinho does, but he'll pop up and, you know, show that he's still out there. And
he was one of the candidates when, I hesitate to use the word candidates, actually, one of the candidates when Valencia first got rid of Kike Sanchez-Flores. They put forward six names, Valencia, and all six had nothing in common except the fact they were famous. And I think the point was they were trying to say to the press, look at us, we could get any coach we wanted. So instead they get stuck with Ronald Koeman.
Right.
and he was one of the names then. There has been in the past, but not recently, some suggestions that he might be interested in coming to England at some stage. But I think there could be two or three big high-profile coaches looking at Spain this summer. Mm. Obviously, Jose Mourinho is one. And it wouldn't at all surprise me if Felipe Scolari turned up at some stage as well.
Oh, right, because I thought he was destined for Eastlands, but that's maybe something we can talk about later on. Sid, that's, I think, pretty much everything. The only point I wanted to mention was that Deco really is a ringer for Ronnie Corbett, isn't he? But that's probably something that's been explored in great depth. Would you not say?
Well, they have actually got him a special big chair in the Barcelona dressing room so that his feet don't touch the floor, and a pair of comedy glasses.
Right. Oh, that's excellent. Very good, Sid. Well, listen, enjoy your wonderful day there in Madrid.
I shall try.
In whichever means you see fit. We'll speak to you soon.
Okay, cheers.
Thanks, Sid. Now, also on our agenda for today's pod, we've got a little bit of talk about Ireland and France, Italy, but should we roll straight onto the Championship, shall we?
Why not?
Oh, let's get James Dart beamed aboard then. Can you press the James Dart button on our control panel there, producer Gamby? James Dart. Hi. Welcome on board, James.
Hi, James. Good to be here.
It's great to have you. And Championship football, eh? Final weekend. Now, I have the impression that not everybody's going to be on board in terms of, you know, caring and commitment to this particular theme. So I want you and John to do a big effort in terms of pushing this and upping the stakes and everything. Final weekend, pretty much everything's still to play for. There's barely a fixture that doesn't count for something, whether it's the promotion battle or the relegation battle. Is that right, John?
That's true, yeah. 10 out of 12 of the games on Sunday mean something.
Right.
In one way or another. Only Scunthorpe and Colchester obviously down. And Cardiff.
So Scunthorpe and Colchester are down, and nobody's definitely promoted yet.
No, West Brom are all but promoted after their point against Southampton on Monday. Though both Stoke and West Brom were 5 minutes away from promotion last Saturday, until Ian Ashby's late winner for Hull meant that Hull still have a chance. And they host
Hull are at Ipswich.
At Ipswich, who are still in the hunt for the playoffs, obviously. Right. Stoke need a point. West Brom, to be official, they need a point, although short of losing 6-0 and Hull winning 6-0.
Right, so you've got West Brom and Stoke who are likely to get the automatic promotion positions, yes?
That's true, yeah.
And then you've got Hull, Bristol City, Watford, Crystal Palace, who are currently in the playoff positions, but that could all change radically this weekend. But just because outside there, you've got various other teams, as you say, Ipswich still in the hunt. Sheffield United, we had a lot of posters talking about this last week, or in particular, Postmaster General, and the incredible turnaround that they've had, as you know yourself, being a United fan.
Absolutely, yeah. Kevin Blackwell's come in mid-February. He's done a fantastic job. I was looking at the stats this morning, and since he's come in and taken over, only Hull have picked up more points than Sheffield United, and he's taken them from sort of lying adrift in the lower mid-table region to having a chance going into the last game, having a shot at the playoffs. They need to win at Southampton, and Southampton obviously have got plenty to play for themselves, and they need three out of the other four results to go in their favour, with Watford, Palace, Wolves and Ipswich either losing or drawing. But it's fantastic. Nobody would have given us a hope of having going into the last game and having a chance.
Because it's so tight, the smallest change can have huge ramifications, can't it? I mean, for example, Southampton getting a couple of half-decent centre-halves. They might still go down, but they've got a chance now, drawing 1-1 at West Brom rather than being hammered.
Well, Southampton are currently in the third last place, which means they'll be going down if they don't get...
But they're at home, so they've got, that's a help. But
they're at home to Sheffield United.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of their new centre-halves is on loan from us. So
but he can play, unfortunately. There is no clause barring him.
That's annoying.
How incompetent is your club?
Well, it's particularly annoying because we've got injury problems and suspension problems at centre-half. Yeah. Our club captain, who plays centre-half, can't play. Mm. And so we've got our right-back playing at centre-half on Sunday.
But you say the incompetence of the club. If they'd sacked Brian Robson a couple of weeks earlier, would they not be going for the automatic rather than the playoff spot?
Absolutely.
Could they not have just not hired him in the first
place. It would have worked out so much better.
Right. And, well, that's fascinating. Sheffield United. And so who are we going to see going upwards, your prediction? West Brom, Stoke, do you think they're going to hang on there? And who's the other one going to be?
One of Hull and Palace, I would say. Bristol right. City have won 1 in 10. Watford have won 1 in 13. Neither of them are in any sort of form going into the playoffs. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if Wolves or Ipswich sneak past Watford.
Well, Watford don't deserve to be in the playoffs with the form that they've shown since the first couple of months of the season. They've been so poor. I think it's almost, I don't like to say the word destiny, but Crystal Palace seem to be on a safe bet for going up at the moment. City are on a real dive of form, and Palace have a real bit of momentum under Neil Warnock, and with a good mix of youth players that they brought in, and they've still got old Clinton Morris and battle-axing his way up front as well. So I personally think that they'll be the men to beat.
Isn't it amazing to see Leicester and Southampton in danger of relegation? Well, it's only 5 minutes ago, you know, as they were established Premier League teams.
It's an absolutely despicable waste of parachute payment money from these clubs. The money that's been frittered away by these clubs, for them to be down there. I mean, you've got Southampton, Leicester, Coventry. I mean, this is crazy that these teams are down there, and they've been outperformed by Blackpool this season, who've just come up. This is an incredible situation.
So where did they spunk their cash on?
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of money down at Southampton. There's been a lot of sort of behind the scenes wrestling for power, obviously with Rupert Lowe. He obviously went. A lot of money was spent on St Mary's. It's a fantastic stadium, but it could be a fantastic stadium in League One next season. Mm. Frustratingly, down there, they've got a superb youth system. A lot of good young players, the likes of Andrew Sermon, another young chap who came through this week, scored at West Brom, Lallana, he scored.
Bale, of course, came through.
Yeah. So, I mean, and you've got Theo who came through as well, not that long ago as well. So they have sold a lot of talent, granted. But it's that if you don't get up in that first season when you've just come down from the Premier League, all kinds of trouble comes with it. And, I mean, Charlton could find themselves in a lot of trouble next season because Pardew's done, I think, a very poor job this season.
And anyone in Leeds, they haven't had the result of their secret arbitration yet.
League One is worth talking about, James, because this weekend, Doncaster, Nottingham Forest and Carlisle all still in contention.
Right. Paul Dawes gone out for a space with League One.
That's not true.
Carlisle, who a few short weeks ago were 5 points clear with a game in hand over Doncaster, have now dropped in second place, now dropped out of the automatic promotion places, allowing Donny to take over. Carlisle have still got a chance, but they host Bournemouth on Saturday. Bournemouth, who were dead and buried a few weeks ago, have won 7 out of their last 8, and with a win have got a great chance of staying up.
Crikey. And your mob Plymouth, how are they doing, James?
they're sort of coasting with nothing to play for now until the end of the season.
Lower leagues, you can't beat them, Paul Doyle. How about that Ireland? Are they not presenting Giovanni Trapattoni on what is a packed news day in the world of football?
Yeah, they are. He's going to be, obviously he was appointed many months ago, but he's going to be unveiled at his first press conference this afternoon.
Why did they wait 3 or 4 months?
Because he was still employed by Red Bull Salzburg
until
the end of April.
Isn't this his sort of fourth unveiling? Because didn't he sort of unveil himself, and then Salzburg unveiled him, then Ireland unveiled him, and now they're doing it again a few months later?
Yeah, but this is his first official press conference as Ireland manager. And if it's anything like his first official press conference as Bayern Munich manager many, many years ago, it would be spectacular, because then he's began in German, realised he didn't speak German. So for the last 15 minutes, just banged the desk. And
do you think he might begin in German again this time, or what?
Yeah, I think he should.
Right. Certainly desk banging high on the agenda, and of course he's got a big team of pros to help him. Liam Brady
and Marco Tardelli.
Yeah, Tardelli. Him of the Scream.
And he's got a big squad for the upcoming match against Serbia. He's picked a squad of 40 players.
Really?
It will be.
Is there office staff in there, or what?
No. David Connolly is in there. I mean, he should really be relegated to office staff at this stage. Picking him is just a provocation, really. And then there's some youngsters who may or may not get a good run under him, because that was the big criticism when he was with Italy, and particularly in Euro 2004. He failed to bring through young talent, relied on the old stagers, and they were terrible in that tournament.
They were.
So although he has a brilliant track record, his more recently suggested he may be over the hill. So it remains to be seen whether Ireland have actually got one of the best managers in world football.
I don't think Giovanni Trapattoni's had a good track record too. I mean, he did okay at Bayern Munich. He won the title one time, he won the German Cup the other.
Yeah,
so I suppose
he won the league with Benfica as well in the 90s, yeah. I think. Yeah, it was, exactly.
Well, there you go. France, meanwhile, Paul. Oh. La Liga. Any PSG tips that we've, you know?
Yeah, lots of stuff involving PSG, actually.
Right.
They are still in the relegation zone, only on goal difference. They're tied on 38 points with two other teams, Lens and Toulouse, as I've mentioned before. And they're playing Toulouse this weekend, so that would be interesting.
At home or away?
It's at home, I think.
Right, not a game to be a Toulouse fan at, I imagine.
Sorry?
Not a game to be a Toulouse fan at.
Actually, no, PSG fans have been in the news this week as well, because PSG, who actually won the League Cup this year, are going to be prevented from defending it next year because they've been banned from the competition because of a banner that their fans waved at a recent League Cup match against Lille.
Do we want to know what it said?
It suggested that people from the north of France were all paedophiles, I think. Something along those lines.
Was this in relation to like a film that came out in France recently? I'm not particularly big on my French films at the moment, but I believe it was quite a popular film domestically in France, and they were sort of referring to the people involved in this film.
No, the term they used was ch'ti, which is a common term for people from the Nord Pas de Calais region.
Have their fans not been invading training a la Italia?
Oh yeah, that was 2 weeks ago. They did invade training, smashed up a few cars, wrote some nice slogans on the wall like, if you get relegated we're going to kill you, that sort of thing. But another reason for PSG not to go down, apart from avoiding death, is there's a guy, there's a player at Metz called Miro Pjanic. Metz are the derby of France. They've been cut adrift at the bottom for ages and they're absolutely terrible. But this player, who's just turned 18 this month, is absolutely fantastic. PSG want to sign him. It's a great story. He was born in Bosnia, but because of the war there, his family fled when he was a toddler. They went to Luxembourg and he's represented Luxembourg as a youth international. And Luxembourg, we go, my God, we've actually got a world-class player here. When he turned 16, France wanted him to play for them because he had been a resident in Metz. Metz is in East France, very close to Luxembourg. But he said that he wanted to play for Bosnia. And the Bosnian FA are very criticised at home for missing out on players like Ibrahimovic and all these families who had to flee during the war. Yeah, the diaspora. So they found out about him. He said publicly he wanted to play for Bosnia, but he didn't have a passport, a Bosnian passport. He had a Luxembourg passport. So he had to get one. But whoever processes passport applications in Bosnia were taking a very long time to do it. And he was coming under more and more pressure from the French authorities to declare for France. So a group of Bosnian ultras stormed the Ministry of Justice or whatever it is and got it sorted out, and he was issued with a passport. And
so is he now?
He is now eligible for Bosnia.
Right.
And Barcelona, I've watched him 12 times this season, and as I say, when he's playing for Metz, an absolutely terrible team.
Would it be good for French football if PSG went down?
It would be a laugh.
not by the sound of it.
But I don't think so, no. I mean, they claim to have 4 million fans throughout France. They are huge. At a time when they're debating, they're arguing for increased television money from the television companies, you don't want such a popular team going down.
Well, that's a fair point. Indeed so. Well, there you go. Still to come in Football Weekly Extra. Quick word on things Italian and your post, and a big look at the weekend in the Premier League, where, of course, Fulham host Birmingham. That's a big one. See you for that in a second or two.
This is Guardian Football Weekly Extra.
Part three. And James Dart has now left us to go terrestrial once more. Uncoincidentally, it's time for my Italian roundup. And let's see. Ooh, since he's been given police protection after Soros rumoured to have withdrawn his offer for Roma. Roma fans very unhappy there because it looks like billionaire Hungarian-American George Soros might not be buying Roma after all. They might be stuck with the Sensis, who are massively in debt. Flamini apparently has admitted in the Arsenal dressing room that he's going to Milan now, not Juventus after all.
Apparently he's on tiny basic wage at Arsenal.
Really?
According to people who know him.
Right.
So, but I mean, Arsenal could fix that if they wanted to.
Right. Well, he's off to Milan, where he presumably will join the youth team, I think. He's under 30, so there you go. Milan, of course, have got a very big weekend ahead of them because they're playing Inter. It's the Milan derby. Milan-Inter. This finished 4-3 to Inter last season. It was an absolute cracker, one of the best Serie A games I've ever seen. And high hopes for a similar this time, because there's certainly plenty to play for. Inter are looking to seal their third straight Scudetto. With 3 games to go, they are 6 points clear. However, if Milan were to beat them, obviously that would reopen the race considerably. John, sorry, have we got problems with the airlock?
Just bring us in tea.
Oh, is he wants to bring us tea? That's
never happened before.
I say we break for tea.
Clearly
listeners will understand.
Clearly, is wasn't it for us.
It wasn't for us.
Well, when's anybody ever brought us
tea? Any sandwiches or just tea?
They looked like it. I didn't actually even see any tea. There was just a big bottle of water there, and I thought that's.
All right, well, hey.
It might have been. I don't think it was.
It's gone now, anyway.
Yeah, we missed the chance.
Anyway, back to the derby. Anyway, so the Inter looking to really blah, blah, blah. And Milan, meanwhile, they're still chasing fourth place. You can imagine how important it is for them to get into the Champions League. Recent results have seen them to close to just 2 points behind Fiorentina with, I repeat, three games to go. Posts, well done Aston Manila this week. Cold Coffee, awards. Awards talk has been rife all over the posts, and Cold Coffee wants some proper categories to give the whole discussion a bit of direction. However, the whole thing's been a bit superseded by Martinsa in Stockholm, who has actually created a special survey web page, which you can go to, and it's got all categories there, and you click on it, fill in your answers, and job's done. This was after I spent 2 hours collating all the answers so far. But brilliant stuff, Martinsa. The address, if you would like to go there, you can find it on the last week's post. But anyway, it's www.surveymonkey.com. Oh, that's long, actually. Yeah, go to the post. You'll find it there. Or maybe, Martinsa, can you just post it up again? Or maybe producer Gamby, can you put it at the front of, in the little introductory bit? Okay, he says he will, listeners. God bless you, Gamby. James Richardson's here. I pity the fool who doesn't give Nabalt the credit for the awards idea. I already cast my vote in favour of Barry's Mr. T. That and Nachos, I think, are the front runners. Lots of other posts this week picking us up on factual errors in our Libertadores roundup, and who'd have thought. Villa support group also pitching in on the issue of who was the greatest fullback of all time. This is one out of left field, not literally, of course. The other Kenny Sampson, 86 caps, hey? Interista says Roberto Carlos isn't even the best fullback at his former club, Inter, because this is what sparked it all, Kevin. It was a Roberto Carlos conversation.
Can I nominate Lilian Thuram?
Go on then.
Yeah.
Can we Paul Breitner? revolutionary. You can't get many of them, do you?
Well, Interista's point was that Inter, it wasn't Roberto Carlos, it was Giacinto Faghetti who would be the chap, an outstanding individual he was. Stuart Pearce, as Simon says. Caught us unawares with that one. Attack defended, scored loads of great free kicks. Captain of country two.
I fear Paul's right though. It is Lilian Thuram, isn't it?
Well, what about Pato and
won the World Cup final at fullback then. Centre half.
Paolo Maldini, anyone?
Maldini,
yeah. Well, anyway, I think the discussion was
I mean, Thuram scored two goals to win the game. Only two goals in his whole career for France. Exactly after he made the mistake. How's that for a reaction?
Splendid.
John, your favourite fullback of all time?
The best fullback I've ever seen play was a guy called Vasilis Bobak. Who was a Greek fullback who played for Sheffield United back in the 90s under Howard Kennedy. He was brilliant. Honestly, he was absolutely brilliant.
I've only got one name, Danny McGrain. There we are.
Kyle, 1982. I'm going to pimp this comment as much as possible. He says, I have had a dream that Chelsea won the double. There, I said it again. My words, I'm a United fan also. And then he says a rude word. So there you go. Chelsea, well, the dream double is on. Let's have a look at the Premier weekend, eh? First up, two that are battling away for the title. Chelsea are at Newcastle United, who are unbeaten in their last six games. What do you reckon?
I think I'm going to that one. I think Newcastle obviously have done well, but I don't think they've been tested by a high calibre team.
Right.
And I can't believe their defence has been cured just by the laying on of hands of Kevin Keegan. So
no.
I wonder if Chelsea might score a couple of goals.
I was at their match at Upton Park last week and they're absolutely dismal, particularly in the first half, although they did draw 2-2. But at defence, with Abdoulaye Faye out, they're very vulnerable, and I can't see, you know, David Edgar being able to contain Drogba or Anelka or whoever they choose to field. Likewise, United playing West Ham.
Right.
And the Hammers are weak at the back as well. They have James Tompkins in there, who's just, I think last week may even have been his full debut, and he actually looks very promising. But whether he's ready to fend off a United going for the title,
I
doubt it. So
United lost their last three.
Have to take points off United, I think, the last game.
You think that's where it all hangs on? West Ham won their last three league meetings with Man United, but that's largely irrelevant, is it?
Well, last season it was the last game of the season, and United played quite a weakened
team. And West Ham actually needed to win. I mean, Kerberski was saying after the match last
week,
it's a big game for us. We have to hang on to 10th place.
And who scored the winning goal?
It was Carlos Tevez.
Exactly. Who you're a big fan of, Paul, who's now playing for the other side. But not
yet. Yeah, he's very industrious.
You know. What's that, lawyers? Okay. All right, let's move on. United have won 16 and lost one of their last 17 Premier League games at Old Trafford. Oh, excuse me. Man City. Sven-Göran Eriksson. What do you think? Should he stay or should he go? Kevin.
I think he should stay. I mean, I think his record, we sneered at him with England until we saw what followed him. And thought, right. Sven, what a smart guy he was, really.
But he's on the way, isn't he?
He does seem to be. He spent some money, but spent very hurriedly. He had to do it. I mean, they did require players. I don't think he made that many bad signings. Maybe the lack of a really good forward. The fact that Bianchi was useless was a terrible blow to City. And all season that's dogged them. They don't quite have enough.
I think he should go. And I think Taxon should do what I think a lot of these billionaire owners should do, you know, just
manage it himself.
I think he should field himself at centre forward. I mean, what's the point in owning a club if you can't push your dream to the max?
Right. And
that's what they want to do. Well, that's what it's about.
What was that great Heaven Can Wait, great Warren Beatty movie? Did you not see that
much,
one? Fantastic. No. From the 70s, so yeah, before your time. Kevin, you've just been to see In Bruges, haven't you?
Yes, brilliant. Fantastic screenplay. You could call it a black comedy. It's about two assassins who have done a hit and are lying low in Bruges.
Right.
One of them, Colin Farrell, my mind's gone, so sleep deprivation. But and he hates Bruges, and he has lovely, beautiful shots of Bruges, medieval grandeur. He's going, I hate effing Bruges. And so on. There's all that through the film. And it's kind of amusing.
You haven't thought the ending for us,
no? No, no. Okay. It's amusing and strange, and you don't know where it's going next. It's very unsettling, but the dialogue is just magnificent, is it?
Right, but you'd recommend it. It gets the Kevin recommendation.
Absolutely. It's like nothing else. You can't even classify it as a comedy, as a thriller. I don't know. It's sui generis is the phrase in the old,
Very nice. Hors de catégorie, as they say. And again, I'm not mentioning Ronaldo on this one, okay? Right, Liverpool are playing Man City, but there you go. I think we've talked about Man City, haven't we? They're probably on their way out. Both teams pretty much ended their season, etc., etc., etc. However, the big stuff's down at the bottom. I mentioned it before, Fulham hosting Birmingham City. How many points away are they from safety, but Fulham?
Three.
3 points. They've only won 6 games all season. They need to win the last two and hope other results go their way. Can they get this one, do you think?
Well, they've got a little bit of momentum, haven't they, now, for the first time in a long time.
Hmm.
The result against the City Manchester Stadium last week was a phenomenal one, and the comeback and the heart that they showed, which is not something you necessarily associate with Roy Hodgson teams.
Or with Kamara scoring two goals.
Exactly. And the second goal was a fantastic...
Capitulations are something you associate with Sven teams.
That said, I think Birmingham will be too good for them.
Really? They've got a good record, haven't they, against London sides, Birmingham? They drew against at Arsenal and West Ham, and they beat Tottenham with that amazing Larsson free kick. Was it a free kick? It was a great shot anyway from
somewhere. It was, yeah.
There you go. So you reckon that Fulham's dream is going to end all over again?
Well, I think they need to, as you say, they need to win, and I think Birmingham will probably get a point there, which won't be a great result for Birmingham, depending on how things go elsewhere.
Now, the other team in the bottom three, Bolton Wanderers, are hosting Sunderland, who have such a great record in the final 5 minutes, etc. But
can I point out,
everyone
talks about how many goals they score in the last 10 minutes.
It's 11, but they've won 11 points courtesy of goals scored in the final 5 minutes of matches.
Yeah, well, they have conceded as many goals in the last 10 minutes as they have scored.
Well, I don't know how that's possible, because it said they picked up an 11 points courtesy of goals scored in the final minutes.
They've also dropped points courtesy of goals scored in the last minute.
Can you do both at the same time?
not the same game.
That's the other point.
All right. So Bolton, any chance of them digging themselves out of trouble? No? All right. Middlesbrough, Portsmouth, you don't care that much, do you? Although, you know, obviously you do if you're a fan of...
I think Middlesbrough might be in trouble. There's still a chance of them dropping. And they got beaten by Sunderland last weekend, didn't they?
Right.
And
they've won only once in the last 10 league games.
Yeah, they're just...
And they're
very
poor at home, aren't they? The home's their weakest aspect.
The home form star. They don't score at home. Only Derby have scored less than them.
But they've now got Fonso Alves and he's on a roll.
But
he's eating a roll.
He looks like a roll.
Yes. But to get relegated, the way they play football, it would be shameful for them. I mean, they play some nice stuff, Middlesbrough.
Sometimes.
That would mean Gareth Southgate has pulled off the impressive feat of making Steve McClaren look like a good manager.
Mm.
That said, it would take a set of quite bizarre results for them to go down, but they're still in it. They're not safe unless they get a...
As are Reading, who are hosting Spurs, who've had 4 consecutive 1-1 draws. Now, Reading are in some trouble there, aren't they?
Yeah, they're the target for Birmingham and Fulham, certainly.
They haven't scored in 5 league games.
I didn't know that. But that's true.
And their team selection is getting increasingly bizarre. I mean, we had that thing at Arsenal, obviously, where he fielded virtually a second string team. Last week he had Andre Bique in midfield. He's grappling desperately for inspiration from
office
somewhere.
Office staff, I think, is the next step.
Steve Coppell brought back Glenn Little, who'd been out injured for a long part of the season, and he was asked about him in his pre-match press conference. And he started his reply with, I'm not saying that Glenn Little's going to rescue our season, but, and then carry on from there. I think if you got to that sort of stage, then you're in some sort of trouble, aren't you?
Yeah. The other issue still to be decided, of course, is the fifth UEFA Cup, fifth place and UEFA Cup qualifications. Not the only UEFA Cup place, somebody was asking about this. There are two others, but they'll be going to people through the, one Carling Cup, which is Tottenham, and the other one's the FA Cup, which is, etc. Anyway, now, Everton currently still 3 points ahead of Aston Villa, but Everton are away to Arsenal, where they have an absolutely appalling record, whereas Aston Villa are hosting Wigan, and you'd probably fancy them to get points there.
Yeah, and Arsenal are actually quite enjoying themselves. I mean, I hadn't realised they're still in contention for the title, aren't they?
They are.
4 points behind, six on the table.
I think it's difficult for Everton, who have slipped a bit, haven't they? That home draw wasn't very clever last week.
No, indeed not. Arsenal have only lost one game of 54 in all competitions at the Emirates. That's amazing, isn't it? Everton, by contrast, have only won one of their last seven matches, and they've been really bad against top four this season. So there you go. Blackburn Rovers taking on Derby County. Meanwhile, I only mentioned that because a couple of posts on the whole subject of Derby. Wonk says, much respect for Derby fans. Anybody's supporters who can fill a 30,000-seater stadium week in, week out to watch the worst team in the Premier League, well, the history of the Premier League, puts the rest of us to shame, says Wonk. Indeed they do. Andy and Brum, in regards to the pod and the cost of Modric, which Barry is right, is saying that 15 million isn't particularly expensive for young players. How about some praise for Rocky Santa Cruz, who must be pound for pound the best striker in the league at the moment. 20 goals for £3 million.
Just on the subject of praising Derby fans for continuing to turn up, even though they're served up absolute rubbish. Only in the crazy world of football is that considered an honourable thing to do. If your team is playing rubbish, you protest by withholding your custom.
Is that so? Do you not stick with
that's one way of doing it. That's what I'd do.
Thin? No, OK, well, there you go. A forum for differing viewpoints. I think that's an important aspect of the pod.
I think by Paul Singer, actually, you can't bear not to watch your team if you're a fan, no matter how bad they are. I think that's normal, isn't it?
Who's your team, Paul?
I don't have a team.
But you do, though, don't you?
I don't.
It might be in another country or another continent.
Absolutely not.
Who's that, Camby? Hearts of Oak?
No. Whose nickname is Fabulous.
Right.
No, I don't support them. I don't support anyone.
Right. Can you tell us a bit more about Hearts of Oak, nickname Fabulous?
Well, their nickname is Fabulous, and their big rivals are Asante Kotoko, whose nickname is Phobia. So the derby is Fabulous v Phobia.
Oh, that's great.
It's brilliant.
That's great.
Oh, and I was just telling Camby that when I was in Ghana, I picked up an authentic Hearts of Oak jersey for £4.
Right.
Camby made the point I should have bought about 100 of them and sold them back here for a
huge
profit.
Do they say Hearts of Oak on them?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. And what was it? Fantastic and Phobia? Yeah. Why are the
others? Fabulous and Phobia.
Fabulous and Phobia. My word. Fantastic. Oh, indeed, fabulous. Very good. That's it for Football Weekly Extra. And many, many thanks for all your posts. On the subject of the awards and stuff, we'll be dealing with that further down the line when we get to the end of the season. Many, many thanks to everyone who posted on for that. And many thanks to Kevin McCarra for being with us today.
Thank you.
James Dart for his brief apparition. John Ashdown.
Thank you.
And Paul Doyle.
Thanks, James.
And you, producer Camby. But and above all, you, the listener. And thanks for sticking with us. We'll be back on Monday. Bye-bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.